Introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Susan Kincannon from Beloit, Kansas. I represent District 107, which is 3.5 counties in north central Kansas: Mitchell, Cloud, Ottawa, and half of Lincoln County.
And our other guest, introduce yourself, please.
I'm Don Hill from Emporia. My district is the 60th district in the House. The 60th district is comprised of about three-fourths of the city of Emporia. I have rural area in west central Lyon County. That's the 60th district.
Two legislative guests today. We're going to tell you why, but first, we're going to hear the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
Couldn't be happier to have Susan Kincannon in the KCUR production studio today from Beloit. That is just past Manhattan, a little bit north of Salina. And Don Hill, thank you for being on the line with us from Emporia. Joining me in the KCUR 89.3 production studio, my friend and the guy who runs the KHI News Service, Jim McLean. Jimmy, thank you for being here.
Hey, good morning, Sam. Always a pleasure to have coffee and donuts with you on the blend.
I'm glad that you're having the donuts. So until recently, Susan and Don were on the Kansas House Health and Human Services Committee. That is no longer the case, and we're going to explore that. But first, my favorite State House blend questions to both of you. Tell me about your families and your pets and how you got into politics. Don, we're going to start with you.
Well, I first ran for the House of Representatives in 2002, having never run for office before, but kind of a political junkie and had been involved in business and in civic activities in Emporia. In 2002, the seat in the 60th was an open seat, and I decided to jump in, and I've appreciated the opportunity. It's been great. My family... my wife Robbie and I have two children, and we have three grandchildren and two grand dogs. daughter lives in Johnson County with her family. Our son Spencer is in Los Angeles.
I like that. Susan, you?
Well, I am married to a physician, and we've been married.
What's his name?
His name is Craig Kincannon.
All right, sorry. Go ahead.
We've been married 35 years as of a couple weeks ago, then we have three children. Our oldest is Jessica, who lives in Olathe and is a chiropractic student, and our second daughter is a nurse, an RN, labor and delivery, and lives in Omaha, and the mother of our four-year-old twin grandsons. And then our youngest is a second-year veterinary student at Kansas State University.
Wow, these are some accomplished kids, part of the whole family business.
Yeah.
Are there pets anywhere in your life?
We do have a Welsh corgi named Stella that keeps Craig company while I'm in Topeka.
Isn't that the same kind of dog that Queen Elizabeth has?
It is.
Oh, okay.
And who is Stella named after?
A beer.
I think that's my favorite pet story yet. I think that's my favorite State House Blend pet story yet. All right, I got a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions, but first I want to bring Jim in and ask what's on your mind.
What's on my mind this morning?
Yep.
Well, I'm glad to be here, but I mean, I know we're going to talk a little bit about it, but it really was pretty extraordinary last week when Representative Kincannon here and Representative Hill and Representative Barbara Beaulieu right. of Mission Hills were all booted off the Health and Human Services Committee, ostensibly because I think all three of you are at least open to talking about a Medicaid expansion. So what I'm really curious about is that the reason you were given?
It was.
Mm-hmm.
For me, yes. In the telephone conversation I had with the chief of staff for the Speaker of the House, it was expressed to me that the discussion was solely wrapped around Medicaid expansion.
How are you? So tell me how that went. I'm curious that how do they deliver that message?
Well, I received a phone call. I just arrived home from being in the Veterans Day parade in Beloit, and I received a phone call. It was very pleasant. We were just making small talk, and then she just said, that it would probably come as no surprise to me that they were going to not only remove me from my vice chairmanship, but completely remove me from the committee, and I was assigned a new committee.
And I want to come back to that for a second, but Don, I want to hear, how was the news delivered to you?
It was a similar fashion. Got a call from the Speaker's chief of staff, it was cordial, of course, interestingly, this is actually the second time that I've been removed from the Health Committee. I was, and this is far more unusual because it's in the middle of the biennium, and this shakeup affects 9 or 10 people in all. But my situation is a little bit different, as you may know. I was also removed from the Appropriations Committee. So they got a twofer with shuffling me around. And there was no indication that it was specifically related to Medicaid expansion. Obviously, we know now, as it's been acknowledged by the Speaker's office, that that was a component of it. But a lot of other stuff going on besides just that issue.
Don, do you think that your removal from the Appropriations Committee had anything to do with the fact that you voted against the tax bill last year?
I'm sure that's no doubt could be part of the equation. I don't know that specifically, but yeah, that was a very, very tough vote. I think it was a vote where there were maybe as many as 40 legislators who had signed a no new tax pledge voted for that tax increase.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, and at least several of the other people involved in the shakeup were also did not vote for that. So I suspect they weren't too anxious to have me asking questions and advocating for some of the things that I feel need advocating for in the spending process. I will say that I did get a call from the Appropriations Chairman that same evening. I think Susan may have gotten a call as well. That was not necessary, but was appreciated. I think it was a stand-up thing on the Appropriations Chair, Ron Reichman Jr.'s part, to make that that call and share with us.
Representative Reichman, of course, from Johnson County. We've had the pleasure of having him on this podcast. I want to get back to the politics in just a second, but I want to ask both of you. You both have what I would consider a background that would make you pretty valuable, it would seem, on the Health and Human Services Committee. Susan, tell me about your background.
Well, I don't. I've seen in several publications that I'm an expert in healthcare delivery. I don't consider myself an expert, but I've just been around it almost my entire life. And being married to a physician, and the 3 years before I started in the legislature, I started a foundation that supports health projects in the community, and as well as helps fund some things that the hospital might need. And that gave me an opportunity to work closely with the hospital administrator and have a little bit of understanding about the financial situation of our critical access hospitals and in rural Kansas. And I think that once I became part of the health committee and started asking questions, it was, it became very apparent that, I know what the Board of Healing Arts is and what CMS is and the state trauma system. And these are all things that my husband has been involved with. And the Healthcare Stabilization Fund, that's a little bit hard for people to understand. And I was actually part of that movement back in the 80s when we were trying to rein in the malpractice insurance crisis. And so that's kind of what my background is. I worked then with the foundation for a few years until coming to the legislature.
Right. Representative Boyer, of course, an MD and also a friend of State House Blend. Don, tell me your background in healthcare.
I'm a pharmacist by training, continue to practice pharmacy, and The health committee was a good fit. I just want to say quickly, Susan is being entirely too modest. She's been an excellent vice chair of the committee. The committee deals in a myriad of issues, which, by the way, I should add quickly, are not partisan issues. These are issues that are critical to the health care and the well-being of Kansans. There's a lot of issues that we discussed there to do with scope of practice and allowing health care providers to be all that they can be. Similar to Susan, I've had a number of opportunities after being in the legislative arena. I was the speaker's appointee from the House Republican Caucus to the Healthy Kansans 2020 Task Force. I've been on the Health Policy Oversight Committee. I was appointed by the governor to the Healthcare Cost Containment Commission early in my term, and been active in the Standing Health Committee of the National Conference of State Legislators. And I know Susan has been the chair of the Midwest region of the Conference of State Governments. It's important, I think, to note that of the four people that were removed from the health committee, Kevin Jones was the fourth. Three of us represent areas which have rural components and have critical care, critical access hospitals. All four of the replacements are from urban areas. The only world you have is the world you know, and Susan certainly knows rural health care better than anyone in the legislature, I would suggest. A really important perspective to have the benefit of, and that's now going to be lost to the Health Committee.
All right. Well, I have to say that it seems to me that we lost a lot of expertise on a committee that is quite important. And I want somebody to explain to me. In fact, I want all of you to explain to me. And I'm going to start with you, Jimmy. What is this all about? How did we get here that we would decide that it was good to take expertise off a committee like this?
Well, Sam, I'm in no position to have an explanation for that. I mean, I'm an observer of the process. I can say this after having been around the State House for 30-plus years. I mean, it's a political place. I mean, it is where politics gets practiced. So I've seen hardball politics a lot over those years, but I've never seen anything quite like this. I mean, it's kind of a massive purge, Appropriations Health Committee. And it was quite apparent from the minute that the news broke that it was because of some positions that these legislators had taken. And based on what you just heard from Don and from Susan and what I know about Barbara, they were informed positions, positions informed by their experience in the healthcare realm. So I think it's a pretty heavy-handed tactic. And my question, I want you to answer Sam's question, but I'm just very curious about how people back home are reacting to this, because it just doesn't seem to me, in the political sense, to be a very effective tactic.
Well, in my situation, it was very timely that and in no way planned, my district survey went out the week that this all came down last week. And so people were, a day or two after the news hit, people were filling out a survey and mailing it back to me. So I am getting a lot of feedback right now, and people are quite upset in my district.
What do they say? Why are they upset? Just because they think they've been denied representation somehow?
Yes, absolutely. And they agree that that, you know, I kind of knew what was going on the committee, and the whole strategy to circumvent any attempt at expanding Medicaid. Where and then back to your question about how did this all come to play? There, you know, the closing of the hospital in Independence then has led to a little bit more interest and a lot more conversation, and then about 2 or 3 weeks ago we had a forum in Wichita where we brought in some legislators and administration from Indiana to talk about their Medicaid expansion. And Indiana looks a lot like Kansas, where they
conservative have state, Republican governor.
Supermajority right. in yep. both houses.
Right.
And, you know, it was so refreshing to hear them talk, where they saw that they had a problem, that people fell in this gap and were not insured. And then they went to work to find a solution rather than, you know, saying no to everything, which is what we are doing. And like Senator King said at that meeting, we no cannot be the answer to everything anymore. We've got some issues.
Right, Senator King from Independence with a hospital clinic.
Right.
Just 20 seconds here, because we don't want to go too deeply into this, but Medicaid expansion, 30-some states around the country have expanded their Medicaid programs in various ways. Others haven't. Kansas and Missouri both are among those that have not. And, you know, we're approaching $850 million that in federal money that has not come to the state because of the decision so far not to expand Medicaid. The Independence Hospital, to some degree, blames the lack of expansion. I mean, the reason it had to close. And about 150,000 Kansans right now that kind of are in this gap. They're uninsured. They would be covered by Medicaid expansion. But, of course, that hasn't happened so far.
Right. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons why some of our rural hospitals are struggling that that we can't have any impact
right.
on the low income, the aging population. But this is one that we can, and it can make a difference. And so that's why we're looking at. And after the meeting in Wichita, it just seemed like we were kind of gaining some momentum. And I think this was a way to put the stop on the momentum. And I think that I think it was not only to stop the movement that we were making, but more so a message to our caucus.
And that message was, don't do it. Don't even think about it.
If you start discussing these harebrained ideas, that you will be removed from your committee. And
it's not just, and it's, by the way, it's not just Medicaid expansion. There's a lot of health issues out there. I want to play a little bit of a piece that our colleague Andy Marceau from KHI just did on a so-called right to try, and then I want to talk about it on the other end.
Kelly Johnson has had ALS for 7 years now, and it's making everyday life increasingly hard for her. Here she is laboring to talk with State Representative Don Hill in her Emporia home.
How often are you going to your doctor in Kansas City?
Every 6 months. I usually go every 3 months, but about 2 years.
Hill, a moderate Republican from Emporia, is one of several lawmakers co-sponsoring a Right to Try bill. It would allow terminally ill Kansans like Johnson to try promising drugs that have passed only the earliest stages of FDA testing. During his visit to her home, Hill briefs Johnson on his strategy for moving the bill through the legislative process.
I've met a couple of times. I saw him again yesterday with Dan Hawkins, who's the chair of the Health Committee in the House. One of his thoughts is that we might...
Johnson spends a lot of time on the internet, searching for drugs that could possibly help slow the disease that is taking her life. She's found one, but the drug is still being tested, and the company that makes it says it could be 3 years before it clears the FDA.
Don Hill down there in Emporia, now that you're not on the health committee any longer, what does this mean for Right to Try and your constituents down there?
I actually think that my removal from the committee will probably not impact the likely success or the outcome of Right to Try. As I mentioned earlier, this is one of those issues that, you know, it isn't a partisan issue. It's an issue that involves all of us doing the best we can as we understand the information to represent our constituents and our district. And I'm intending to continue to be involved in that issue and be happy to work with the chairman of the committee if there are ways that he feels I might be helpful.
Do you think, though, that not being on the committee, that may cut into your effectiveness, or can you still push this from your position as a state representative?
I'm sure that Susan and I will, and many others, by the way, will only redouble our efforts in terms of our advocacy, especially in health-related matters. You know, to get back to the earlier discussion, I think the leadership was short-sighted and ill-advised. The response I've had from my constituents has been overwhelming, and there is the sentiment that they've been deprived of voice. There are the questions, you know, what's a democracy supposed to be? They have this conception that it's, you know, about open discussion of competing interest and a process that's been short-circuited. I think that Susan mentioned the momentum of the Medicaid expansion. You know, we politicians never flip-flop, but we certainly should reserve the right to make a different decision based on new information. And since we left the session last year, I mean, there's been a number of developments. Susan and I think Jim mentioned the Independence Hospital closing, mentioned the Indiana expansion. Now there are 10 states with Republican governors that have expanded Medicaid. It's very significant that the Kansas bishops, since the session ended, have endorsed Medicaid expansion. There's credible polling. Two significant polls now have indicated that Kansans, by a strong majority, favor Medicaid expansion. The grassroots effort is building, there's no doubt. And I think the developments of the 11th of November have only increased that momentum, and will continue to build. And one final additional item, just in the last couple days, we know that the Wichita Chamber of Commerce has provided a conditional or at least a limited endorsement of Medicaid expansion. That's a significant development, and I think that the business community and other chambers are going to be moving in that path as well.
I want to bring Jim back in here in just a second, but I've got I just want to follow up on one question and ask both of you. When you said that you were told that you had been booted off the committee, that phone call came from Ray Merrick's chief of staff. I do want to say that we've repeatedly asked the speaker to be on this podcast, and he has so far said no. But I'm wondering, is that not the kind of news that the speaker himself should deliver to you as opposed to the chief of staff, Susan?
Hmm. Well, I would have liked to have spoken to the speaker hear it from him and have this discussion with him. There's just been a general lack of communication, and it even stems from last year when they were with the selection of chairman and vice chairman. So yeah, it would have been very appropriate to have heard from Speaker Merrick.
Don, your thought on that?
I didn't necessarily expect that. I agree with Susan. Certainly, I know both of us, we respect the office. We respect the speaker and the difficult job he has to do. The reality is we only have one speaker at a time. It's important for us, if we want to do the best job of representing our constituency, that we are always constructive, but it's also very important, by the way, that when we have legitimate disagreements, that we not cower, that we make an effective advocacy, and we push forward. This is one of those situations where a difference on an issue puts us at odds, and I think it's very important that we redouble our efforts, just as apparently the speaker and leadership were redoubling theirs with the purge from the committee.
Yeah. Jim, you've been furiously taking notes, and I demand to know what are in them. So let's share here a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think we made a little news here, Sam, this morning. I mean, the statements from both Representative Hill and Representative Concannon about there was momentum finally developing for the Medicaid expansion issue, and their comments about this tactic being short-sighted. I mean, I think that is a story because there are dots to connect here, and I think it was very heavy-handed. It was very public, and the reasons for the removal from the committee were very public. So essentially, he's made legislative martyrs out of them. He's raised the profile of an issue that he would rather bury. And the other thing I think about that is, if you go back to last session, members of the Kansas House never did have a chance to debate the state budget. in open session on the floor, because they were afraid that a Medicare expansion amendment or other things might have been offered, and the leadership didn't know how those votes would go. So they essentially very tightly controlled the process last year. So you had 125 members of the Kansas House who had an up or down vote on the massive state budget, but didn't have a chance to debate it or amend it. And so I think what's starting to come through now to the public is this kind of tactic. The public is becoming resentful because they send their representatives to Topeka to represent their interests, to engage in dialogue and debate. And essentially, this kind of very tight control of the process excludes their voices from the process, as Representative Hill said. That's just an observation. I'm not taking a stance one way or another for this or against that. It's just an observation of somebody who's been around there for a long time. And I do think that's now starting to register with the public. It'll be very interesting then to see if there's any backlash or what the consequences of that are.
Jim McLean, your final thought or question for Susan and Don?
Well, my final question for Susan and Don is, again, notwithstanding this tactic and the publicity it's generating, really, don't you think what will happen with Medicaid expansion this session? Still a long shot, isn't it, for anything to really happen on it? But is there truly momentum for the issue?
I truly see momentum for the issue. It's a difficult it's difficult to forecast what will happen with it this year. With it depends on how the grassroots movement picks up, but and heaven forbid that we have another hospital closure. But I think it's a hard topic to get into on an election year. Mm-hmm. I think our colleagues are fearful of it, and so I really don't. I'm optimistic always as well, but I really don't think that. It's got a prayer for this session.
Long term, you think continuing the momentum this year at the very least, and then maybe later we'll get to a point where...
It's such an integral part of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare to function. I mean, this is how the providers get paid. And so it will happen, but it's just a matter of when it's going to happen. It just must. But I also want to add that I don't think anything's coming out of the Health Committee this year. There's just the committee may pass some bills out, but there's nothing that's going to come to the House floor because there's so much fear of having Medicaid expansion amended onto any health bill.
Interesting.
And so it, you know, the replacements on the committee are disappointing, but and it was devastating and embarrassing for me to no longer be on the committee. But at the end of the day, that committee is not really going to do any work during this next session.
Don, you pessimistic or optimistic about Medicaid expansion?
I mentioned the six things that had happened since the end of the last session that to add to the momentum and that might change the perspective of legislators that are willing to be open rather than just to vote as they are told or to vote according to a certain ideology. Those new aspects will continue to come to light. I wouldn't be as strong an advocate for Medicaid expansion as I am if I weren't absolutely convinced that this will be stimulative to our economy, and that's much needed. As data starts to come from other states that have expanded Medicaid and validates that, brings new information to light, I think that Susan and I have enough colleagues in the House that probably already agree with Medicaid expansion. I think there will be more added to that list. And so it certainly should come to discussion and a vote, and if it doesn't, it will be by virtue of the heavy-handed blocking obstructionist techniques that we certainly have to agree that leadership has at their disposal. They've demonstrated that by the reassignments from the committee. So it'll be a continued item of focus, as it should be, some stress, and frankly, very well may be an issue at the ballot in 2016, and I welcome that.
We're going to have to leave it there, and we're going to move from heavy-handedness to my second favorite part of the show, and that is that we end every podcast with walk-off music picked by our special guests, and because we have two of them today, I'm going to ask both Susan and Don for the song that is on their mind, and then I'm going to pick. So it's not exactly a democracy, but it is nor is it exactly heavy-handed. Susan Concannon, what's the song on your mind?
The song on my mind is Taylor Swift's Shake It Off.
I have to say I'm a little taken aback by that, but that is an early lead in the voting. Don Hill, what is the song that is on your mind?
I'll go with Carly Simon, Anticipation.
And you know what? I am going to go with Carly Simon and Anticipation as well. Don Hill from Emporia, thank you for being on the phone with us. Susan, thanks for coming in from Beloit, and Jim McLean from the KHI News Service, always enlightening and edifying for me, and I have all of you
edifying. Wouldn't have
to
missed
thank
it.
You for that. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. Hey, there's Carly Simon right there. You can subscribe to KCUR's Statehouse Blend on iTunes. Find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend. And our friends down there at Up to Date make a little room for us Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Love having citizen guests on the show. If you want to have coffee and donuts, and not everybody partakes of the donuts, so sometimes there's a little extra, you can go ahead and email me. I'm at sam@kcur.org. Are you a fan of the Twitter? I bet you are. You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. My co-host is Brian Ellison, and you can follow him at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. Thanks a lot. See you later.